I was nervous if I could pay my mortgage, if I could just, you know, pay the normal bills I had to live.
Devastated by a scam, then slapped with a bill.
I don't have enough money to pay even like a quarter of that right now.
Why one woman owes the IRS thousands of dollars after cyber criminals stole her life savings. Plus,
they've gotten their money and they've moved on.
She thought an online business was located in Wisconsin. It wasn't.
Basically, con artists or scammers hijacking legitimate addresses.
What Contact 6 found instead at the spoofed address. From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm Brian Polson, and I'm joined this week by Contact 6's Jenna Sachs. Hi, Jenna.
Hi.
And we're all, as always, joined by executive producer Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, April 24th, for release on Thursday, April 25th. And we're going to talk about a couple of Contact 6 stories this week involving scams, ripoffs, and some really strange things that you found as you looked into these stories. I'm always fascinated, and I saved my questions for you, Jenna, because I have so many, but I saved them. We're going to talk about them here coming up in a little bit.
All right, that sounds good. These ones stand out because they involved a lot of money lost. And so that's why we wanted to include them in the podcast and report on them for Fox 6, because we hear about all sorts of scams, but these ones were big dollar amounts.
And in one of them, the tax man is involved, and that gets even more interesting. So we're going to talk about all of that when we come back after this. Last year, Caitlin Hensie, is that, did I pronounce that right? Okay, she lost her life savings to a pretty complicated scam. And months later, she learned that that stolen money, that wasn't bad enough.
Yeah.
It was taxable. Uncle Sam wanted his chunk. But as you found out, Jenna, that hasn't always been how it works. So you've done a couple of reports with Caitlin. Tell us a little bit more about this scam and particularly why it was so convincing, because this is a big dollar scam.
It was. So at its most basic, it's a bank impersonation scam, which is fairly common, but these scammers took it to the next level. So it started with a phone call. The caller ID said Wells Fargo. She answered the phone. It said, "Hi, we're with the Wells Fargo fraud department. We think you've been the victim of identity theft." So she logged on to her banking accounts and saw there were some irregular transactions there. So far the story is lining up. The person on the phone then transferred her to a person who claimed to be an officer with the Federal Trade Commission. And this person was supposedly going to work with her to help her protect her money. And this is where things get complicated, because she went online, she looked up the phone numbers, she looked up the names of the people she was talking with, and they all seemed to be legitimate. And she challenged these people with a lot of questions, and they always seemed to have an answer. But basically, they laid out a number of steps that she had to take to secure her money from the identity thieves. And it was going to include some unusual methods, because they were trying to avoid detection by the thieves. And she was told to, you know, buy Bitcoin, buy gift cards, make a lot of wire transfers, and basically take all these steps to reopen a new bank account under a new social security number, which they were going to issue to her at the very end.
Oh, Lord.
And I'm hearing a million alarm bells going off. But
right.
What's interesting is you said, I really think the spin is so interesting. They said that she had to take these sort of evasive maneuvers to hide from the thieves. And yet it's the thieves who are telling her to do all these things.
Exactly. And they really set it up to her in that way. We're going to do some strange things here because we don't want them to find out. And by the way, don't talk to anyone about it, because the identity thief might be someone very close to you. That's often the case. And there was also this underlying threat of, if you don't cooperate, we're going to think that you're somehow involved in money laundering. So I know all of this sounds like a million red flags, but she was challenging them along the way, asking for proof, documentation. And they sent her pictures of badges, falsified government records, bank statements that seemed to line up with everything they were telling her. Yeah. And they were also in constant communication with her and developing a relationship along the way.
That's the long game, because we've heard of a lot of scams where it's kind of almost like quick. Like, you know, they might call or email and you click on a link and suddenly, you know, all your information is out there. This sounds like you said, they built the relationship, and despite her asking the questions, we're still able to, and the fact that she saw the different amounts on her account, you know, I'm sure along the way, I know it sounds like a lot that you're telling us now, but the along the way, I'm sure every time she was like, oh yeah, okay.
Well, she pictured scammers being not very articulate, right? She said these people seemed very smart, very articulate on the phone, and they always had an answer for everything along the way. And she thought that scams were often quick. You make one bad decision and you lose a lot of money. These people stuck with her for a month plus, constant communication,
putting
that
effort
in. From their
end, they're like, we've got her on the hook, so let's play the slow game.
Right, they're getting money from her along the way. And as they get more money, they're going to keep it going. It's a big ticket scam, and they're willing to put the time and effort into her. And they even got her to drain her 401k in investment accounts, which is where the tax implications come in later. But it was a lot of money. In the end, it was more than $200,000, her entire life savings. And to personalize this, she's been saving that money since she was a kid who did babysitting. She said she really put a lot of effort into building her funds and her savings account, and to have it all wiped out was traumatic.
Jenna, I have so many questions, and I told you I was going to wait to ask them until we were on here. But one of them is, I often think about this, you for a living do this. So as soon as you start to hear her tell the story, the alarm bells are going off in your head. Well, that was a red flag and that was a red flag. But for the people who go through this, they don't spend a lifetime studying this. Mm-hmm. I really think it was compelling what you said, that she expected scammers to be kind of dumb, that they were going, we often see the emails
misspellings.
Websites that don't look right, things that are like, there's a lot of a, come on.
Like, look, just read it.
That's obvious. Yeah. To her, she said, well, these people, not only did they not seem like they were obvious scammers, they had answers. They had things to back up what they were saying.
Right. I can't tell you how often people call me and they're so embarrassed, but also so frustrated by what's happened to them. And sometimes, yes, it's a situation where someone got caught in a bad moment. Maybe they were woken up in the middle of the night, or they were having a stressful day, and the scammer just says something that resonates with them in that moment. But in this case, she went online. Her bank statements seemed to reflect what they were saying. Something was clearly going on.
Do we know, by the way, how that works? Like,
well,
how did they
I believe there was some identity theft involved, because the FTC officer, I say in air quotes, had a lot of her personal information already. He knew her social security number. He knew where her previous address is, where she went to school. So that kind of bolstered his argument that, hey, I'm legitimate. I already have all of this sensitive information about you.
They're the ones causing these transactions and then calling and saying, oh my gosh, you've got these transactions. Yeah. We need to help you.
Right.
And looking back, she's like, I do feel dumb, but I also want to let people know how this happens so that they can learn from it and know that it can happen over a period of time, and also to smart people. She's not a dumb person. She owns her own home. She has a consulting business, and this happens to all sorts of people. I've talked to school board members and presidents of businesses who have been scammed as well.
So it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Did she try to get it back?
She did. The problem in this case is what a lot of scam victims run into. When you are authorizing these transactions yourself, if you're authorizing the money transfer, if you're buying the gift cards, you're taking that action yourself, and it's a matter of personal responsibility. If it were the bank was hacked and they got into your accounts and took your money, you'd have more recourse there. But when they have you there on footage at the bank, you know, authorizing the transfer, sometimes you have to sign a form. You might be even given literature saying, hey, are you sure? Then there's not a lot people can do about it.
So there's this is the just the scam itself is sophisticated and complicated. And then there's this other layer that comes into play, because she's lost her life savings. It's devastating. And then she finds out that, oh, on top of that, by the way, you've got a big tax bill from Uncle Sam.
She did. So this was an extra kick in the pants for her, because she'd already been working so hard to overcome these incredible losses financially. And then she found out, because she withdrew that money from her 401k and her investment accounts, that money is taxable. So she got a bill from the IRS for $15,000 and a tax bill from the state for $7,500. And she was saying, I can't even pay a quarter of that right now. I just felt like I was finally getting my feet underneath me, and now I'm getting hit with this bill and I can't pay it. So she's going to have to pay it back over time, you know, slowly with interest.
We talked a little bit, backing up just a second, with, you know, the FTC officer that was on the phone with her and stuff like that. Did you reach out to the actual FTC?
I did. Yes. So they basically said they will never demand money, make threats, tell you you've won a prize, tell you to transfer money. And they say, if you get a call from anyone who claims to be with a government agency, especially if they're telling you you have to pay some money, hang up immediately, look up the phone number for that agency and call them back directly. The same goes for Wells Fargo or any bank that has an impersonator calling you as well. End the conversation and then call them back directly using the number on your app or on the website.
Well, I was going to say, in one thing about the website, I usually, if you look up the website, you're probably going to find the right one. You do run the risk of running into a spoofed website. Mm-hmm. But if you have documentation, say from Wells Fargo, a bank statement, something like that, or an email that has attachments, that usually has the phone number. You can call that number. Then you know you're calling the number that belongs to that legitimate company, right?
Right. I got a scam call recently from someone who claimed to be with my bank. And I hung up on them and looked up the number on my app, right? Mm-hmm. That's a source I trust. I do my transactions there. So that's a way to double check. Go to a website or a statement that you use regularly or see regularly, and that's the best place to go.
Now, I've done this before, by the way. I know we got to move forward with this piece about the taxes, but you're on the phone with someone, you think, well, but if I call that 800 number, how am I ever going to get back to this right person if they're the right one? I'm going to get stuck in a tree. I have asked people when they've called me, I said, if you're legitimate, I want to call the 800 number on my statement, but what do I do to get back to you or someone in your mm-hmm. position? And they'll guide you through that if they are legitimate. Sometimes that's a good way to know. I'm still going to make that active call to the number I know is real. Mm-hmm. But if you're telling me there's a specific department, who is it? And tell me how to get there.
That's a great idea. Another thing I would mention before we move on to the taxes part is that Wells Fargo told us that they're hearing about this more often. This crime and this scam have really taken off over the last couple of years. So they want people to know you can't always trust the number on your caller ID. And if you get a call like this, do the same thing. Call them back directly because they're not going to do these kind of tactics.
And I'm sure they appreciate, you know, to kind of what you were saying, Brian, is, you know, hey, I know I'm on the phone with you. I'm going to hang up. You know, what's your name? I want to get back to you. They probably don't see if it's a legitimate business corporation, they're not going to be upset by you going, I'm hanging up and I'm going to call back to make sure this is real. They probably appreciate it.
Right. And take your time. Take 24 to 48 hours and do some research and talk to someone you trust about it. Bounce it off another person, and that might do a lot for your clarity.
When we go back to the tax thing, as you were talking about the fact that this is taxable because she withdrew it from her 401k, from her retirement account. I hear that I think most of us who have retirement accounts go, okay, yeah, we know that we're not of retirement age. If we pull money out, there's going to be a penalty. Mm-hmm. There are going to be taxes unless you were doing a Roth or something where it was taxed on the front end. So the fact that she pulled the money out willingly, whether she was buying a car, a new house, or she was duped by scammers, the government says you pulled the money out and it wasn't time.
That's
correct. It hadn't been taxed, so she owes that. But you said that there was actually a time when she could have offset that.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So we found out it hasn't always worked this way. And actually, until recently, scam victims could make a theft loss deduction on their federal tax return. That was prior to 2018. And the itemized deduction went away with something called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. And basically, that act means in this area, no matter how elaborate the scam is, the scam victim has no recourse for getting that money back
or
taking any
losses.
Sort of theft loss deduction. So it was a controversial act when it passed. It basically made a lot of changes to the revenue code, to tax code. It was signed by then President Trump. But it actually sunsets in 2025, all of those changes. So this will have to be renewed at some point or passed again if it's to continue. But yeah, it had this implication on tax victims that I'm not sure everybody expected, but that theft loss deduction is gone.
Well, that's such a huge, when you get into, you're talking about major tax legislation in Congress, details like this probably are kind of small potatoes to the bigger picture, mm-hmm. but to someone who is a fraud or scam victim, it's huge. The ability to claim that loss and therefore offset the taxes for something like that withdrawal that you thought you were doing because you were being ordered by the FTC or directed by a government agency to do. She is a legitimate scam victim. This wasn't something nefarious she was doing. Mm-hmm. It was done to her, but she has no recourse for offsetting the losses. You're saying if that's not renewed in the next tax bill, then this would be possible for people in the future?
Exactly. And if Senator Baldwin gets her way, she has proposed a bill that would address this issue specifically, then it would happen sooner. She has actually put forward a bill. She did it after our story aired a couple days later, and actually her press release included links to two of Caitlin's stories as examples of why she was introducing this bill. But she said her bill would reinstate the deduction for theft losses that went away with the 2017 tax law, and it would also allow those who suffered losses after that law to file an amended tax return accounting for that loss. So it sounds like Caitlin could file an amended tax return if this were to pass. So that's something we had reached out to Senator Johnson and Senator Baldwin for this report. And Baldwin is the one who responded, basically saying that she agreed that this was unacceptable. She felt like scam victims had already suffered enough. They didn't need to be, you know, slapped with a tax bill on top of that. But these are the federal taxes. There's also the state of Wisconsin taxes, that's $7,500. And Wisconsin does not have a theft loss deduction. So she would have to prove in Wisconsin that she's destitute in order to try to get some of that money from, you know, taxes.
And she wasn't quite there.
Yeah. No, she managed through a lot of hard work to hold on to her house. So her assets are considered too high to qualify for that kind of thing.
So, okay. So aside from a potential appeal and, you know, maintaining her house, what's next for her?
Well, she's still working on building up her savings. And she says, I have no choice. I'm just going to have to pay as much of this tax bill as I can. And I'm going to have to incur some interest. I'm just going to try to tackle it over the next year and get rid of it over the next year. And she is, you know, hoping to become a bit of an advocate and speak out and let other people know this happened to me. You know, this is the signs of the scam, but also this is the legislation that's affecting me. She felt strongly she wanted to get out the word that she was also having these tax implications.
I give her so much credit for coming forward, because it is easy to just hide from that, say, I don't want people to know that I got duped. Yeah. But she's out there trying to do some good for others so they don't end up where she is.
Right. And actually, it's interesting. The first time I talked to Caitlin about doing this story, she wasn't ready. It was actually a few months before she felt ready to share her story. And I think she, after the first story aired, she felt more empowered, and she decided she really wanted to become a spokesperson in her own way.
Well, we're going to be talking about a different scam in just a moment that cost another woman tens of thousands of dollars. This one involved a hijacked address in the Madison area. We're going to talk about that when we come right back. So as you mentioned, we talk about one scam. Here's another one. This one cost a woman tens of thousands of dollars because of a hijacked address. The victim of this case is Cindy Castillo. Cindy Castillo. And Jetta, how did she encounter this scammer in the first place?
So Cindy actually lives in California. And a bit of background about her family. Her dad used to run a business where he sold large machinery, construction equipment, cars, boats, and so on. He would buy them at auctions and then resell them. That was his business. And recently he retired, and Cindy decided to sell his business property. And when she had the money from that sale, she decided, you know, I'd like to do something like my dad, and I'd like to start my own business doing the same thing. So she went on Facebook and she started doing some searching, looking for websites that were selling equipment or cars, any of that thing. And she found a website through Facebook, an auction site that sold a backhoe. So she contacted this website, said, hey, I see this backhoe. Can I purchase it? They said yes. She sent—
That's a high dollar item, right?
It is. Yeah, it was about $47,000.
Okay.
And they arranged for a money transfer. And this is the second time I'm mentioning money transfers in this podcast. Money transfers are not easily retrieved. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible. Once that money is sent, it's gone. So
why scammers like them, right?
Yeah, so
that's
sure
always
do.
Not that you can't have a legitimate transaction, right, with wire transfers, but that's a red flag if someone you don't know is asking
you to give you pause,
that, right?
At least, yeah.
Right. And of course, the backhoe was supposed to be shipped to her, and it doesn't arrive. And then all of a sudden, the company's website is gone, and they are not responding to emails anymore, and their telephone calls aren't going through. And so she was left with nothing. I mean, she had that money from a kind of sentimental purchase, her dad's business property, and then to lose such a huge chunk of it was heartbreaking.
So in the last case, we talked about Caitlin, and that was more the long game, and they were calling and lots of interaction and communication. This one kind of sounds like it was, is this available? Great, here's the money, and then poof.
Right, there was some back and forth for a while, like exchanging of addresses and receipts. She has receipts from this company, and there was update shipping information that was updated along the way. So she was getting what she thought were legitimate receipts. But in the end, it didn't matter. That address on the website said that it was in Madison. And had she looked into that address.
You don't normally deal with scam victims in California, right?
No.
So the connection here is the address on the website was in Wisconsin.
Right. And that, if she had looked up that address, something she says she would do from now on, she would have seen that it doesn't look like an area where you would buy heavy machinery. We actually went and checked it out, and we found kind of an urban area, kind of an upscale business complex. It was like a multi-tenant building with like 20 different tenants. You could do shopping there and get your nails done and go to a nice workout class or get a nice meal. But it's urban looking. It's not where you would see heavy machinery sales taking place. It was called the Arbor Gate on the Beltline. So yeah, it was a nice area. It's always interesting to go to those places yourself because you strongly suspect. And then when you see it, you're like, yeah, there's no way. There's absolutely no way that they were selling backhoes out of this facility.
But you've reported on hijacked addresses before, right? This mm-hmm. is an ongoing concern online.
Right. We did a story a couple years ago, maybe, about two people who had bought items through a website they thought was based in Milwaukee. And one had bought beekeeping equipment and the other bought some water tanks. But instead, what they got in the mail were small packages from China. And one contained a tiny nail clip kit and another contained some cheap headphones, and they never got the items they ordered
right, yeah.
And the website disappeared and the phone numbers stopped working and the email didn't get responded to anymore. And the BBB at the time speculated, well, maybe they sent those packages so that they were marked as delivered and it was harder to dispute the charges and, you know, raise the alarm about this business. That website was called AIHSKC, and the first business that Cindy used was called GRTC Repo Time. So I'm just noticing like it's a lot of random letters crammed together.
Sure.
So just look at the website name too and do some research because I think there's a lot we could learn from these experiences.
Why are they using an address at all? I mean, it's a website. Do they need an address? Like, why are they putting an address out there to begin with?
To establish legitimacy. Well, one thing you often look for when you're using a website you've never been to before is, do they have a phone number and an address? And if they don't, that's a red flag to begin with. If they do, this is a good example of why you should look up the phone number, see if there are any complaints online about it. Look up the address, see if the image of that area matches what you think that should B, those are two red flags that you can look out for. And also just do your research in general.
So it was a spoofed address. Mm-hmm. Is there a property manager or someone associated with that? Or is it just kind of an address they pulled out of thin air?
There is. I spoke with the property manager. It's a company called MIG Commercial Real Estate. And they confirmed for me that since opening in 2008, they have never had a tenant called GRTC Repo Time, nor anyone who sold heavy machinery. And actually, they were unaware that their address was being spoofed. They were unaware that this had happened, that someone had been victimized, and you know they felt badly for this woman. But they basically confirmed, no, they're not a tenant here. That sale did not take place here. And also, the BBB did some research, too, into the company, looking into the URL, and it was in Hong Kong. So,
and you know, when I look at these, you wonder sometimes, well, why would somebody go with these questionable looking websites? They seem a little sketchy. Maybe there's some kind of, you look at it, you're not real sure, but it's because the deals are so good, right? I mean, we're all searching for a deal. You go out and you're like, well, okay, that website, I know they're legit, but the price is just too high. Can I find a better deal somewhere else? And it's the attractiveness or the attraction of those deals.
Exactly. Well, that's also another red flag. Often these large items, whether it's a boat or, you know, a backhoe, it's often below market value and you think that you're getting a deal, but often that's a cause for alarm and more reason to do your research before making the purchase.
So was Cindy out $47,000?
She is. Yeah. She went to her bank and they basically told her it's a matter of personal responsibility. You came here, you signed the forms, you received literature warning you about scams. I'm sorry. There's nothing we can do in your case. Yeah, it sounds like this is not all that uncommon from overseas crime organizations and different scammers who just can't be held accountable from here in the U.S.
So how do you, I mean, small dollar items, maybe a beekeeper or, you know, beekeeping kit, you roll the dice, it's 85% off. Maybe I'm going to get a pair of crappy headphones, but maybe this is legit and maybe it's worth rolling the dice on that small ticket item. $47,000. You can't afford to roll the dice. So what? How do you make sure that you're not dealing with a website like this?
Sure. So you can find these types of scams anywhere across the internet, on social media. I would advise people against searching for items or websites and things on social media. I know, like Facebook. Yeah, I mean, even with Facebook Marketplace and stuff like that that's local, you have to be really careful with who you're dealing with. But in general, you should be aware that scammers can just find any picture, a picture of a boat or a car. Maybe they're finding it from a different website and they can just post it on one website, maybe several websites, as their own and make you think that they have that item when they don't. So one thing I don't think a lot of people realize they can do is you can do a reverse image search and see if that picture came from another source. And if you're seeing it in a lot of places, including maybe legitimate websites, then you should really be concerned.
Well, you think
about
like, a backhoe might look really common. So of course there might be the same one, but if you see the exact same background, the exact same setting, and you go, well, this is for sale on 20 different websites, how do I know this is the one I'm buying? That could be obviously something that would stand out.
Right. And there are other things that stand out. You know, a seller who doesn't want to meet in person. This was really common during the COVID-19 pandemic because it gave sellers an excuse not to meet in person, but they might invent a number of other reasons that they can't meet you. And in other cases, not in this one, but they often have similar stories about why they're selling these items. So they may say, I'm going overseas, I'm being deployed, or my spouse died, or I'm getting a divorce. There's often like a sad, but slight, sometimes embarrassing or heart-pulling story as the reason they're getting rid of this great item for such a low price. So that's another red flag you can look out for. There's just a few tips for you.
One more question. So the address in Madison, the property manager said, no, we've never had this. Is there anything business owners or even like residential owners can do to not be using or have their address to be as something that's spoofed?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I wish I could give them some advice. I'm not sure there's a whole lot you can do because in that situation we mentioned with the beekeeping, I didn't mention that that spoofed address was a residential home. It was a single family.
You went and talked about it.
I did. Yeah. And they were surprised and also alarmed saying, what if people come here looking for their items and they're angry and we had nothing to do with it.
It's not the business that the people thought it was when they purchased the stuff.
Right. And I don't think there's a whole lot you can do. If your address is out there, someone can pick it up and use it. And I suppose the only advice I could give you is report it if it happens to you, but I know that's not that great of an answer.
Maybe put a sign in the front yard that says not TKSD Incorporated or whatever it might be.
Oh my, well, interestingly, that family who lived in the home that was being spoofed, they said, you know, this explains a package we got recently with some cheap headphones in it.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe someone was trying to return it for a refund, saying this isn't what I ordered.
And did they give the refund?
They had no idea what was going on.
All right, well, we have a lot more to talk about when it comes to Contact 6 and some updates you have to share, some common complaints, things like that. We're going to go into more of that when we come back right after this. So we talked today about a couple of scam situations, high dollar scams, but obviously that's just a small fraction of the things you guys are seeing at Contact 6. Give us some updates. What's going on with Contact 6 lately?
Yeah, we've had an exciting year so far. So far, I got some numbers from our associate producer, Annette, yesterday. Annette handles all of our off-air cases. And she said so far this year, we've helped resolve 81 cases. These are cases that viewers say, yes, you were helpful to me. You know, thanks. And we've helped people save about $136,000 so far this year. And there's a real range in there. Some of those resolutions are actually for no money at all. So far, our smallest resolution was $35. It was a woman who ordered some diet pills online. And when they arrived, she didn't want them anymore. And there were steps outlined for returning it and getting a full refund. She sent it back. She never got the refund. So that was our smallest resolution. And our largest resolution of the year so far is $21,000. It was a medical billing issue for a woman who'd had a series of strokes and her insurance was not being billed properly. So we were able to help her figure that out as well. So we help with cases of all sizes.
I just love the fact that I love that range and that you mentioned there are some that there are no dollar amounts at all. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those can be the most frustrating. It may not be a dollar amount, but there's a principle behind whatever it is. And people don't know where to turn. And if there's no money involved, it's not going to be a legal case. You're not going to get a lawyer to take it. or you're not going to spend the money on an expensive lawyer. And here you are, you and Annette doing such a great service. It's got to feel good to know that you're helping so many people with such a wide range of issues.
Well, thank you for saying that. And it does. I'm just always like the opportunity to remind people that we are here. You can file a complaint about a business or a government entity on fox6now.com. There's a box on the side that says submit an inquiry with Contact 6, and we can be helpful with all sorts of issues, from online purchases to medical bills, appliance repairs, issues with your cell phone bills. There's a lot of areas where we can be effective.
And I feel like consumers, you know, they'll message a company if they feel like they've been wronged, and maybe they think it's just going into the abyss. Like, who's going to get this email or this form that I'm filling out? But with Contact 6, with you and Annette, there are people on the other side of that. You know, you guys are taking each of these complaints and truly looking at every single one of them and replying, forwarding it to the business, filing an actual complaint with the business. So there's action being taken. So when people do submit their complaint, knowing that it does go to actual people.
Right. I think when we can be most effective is when someone has gotten stuck in that customer service circle where they're just getting passed around and no one seems to be able to address their issue on the phone or maybe by email, or maybe they're not responding to your emails anymore. We can kind of cut through that clutter and go to our contacts at those businesses. We have a lot of people who are very familiar at different businesses with what we do, and we can send it directly to them, and it will get special attention if we send it along on their behalf. And we're basically saying, hey, can you take a second look at this issue, and do you think it could be resolved? And often that's all it takes.
Well, and I know that not every issue can be resolved to the satisfaction of the person who's writing, but what sense do you get of people who are just grateful that someone listened, someone took it seriously, checked into it, and okay, as it turns out, I'm not going to get the satisfaction I wanted, but I feel better that somebody heard me.
Sometimes that's the case. We obviously can't resolve every case, right? Sometimes we go to the extent of doing a report about it on air, but we do pay attention to every complaint. Annette will follow up with people on the phone if need be, have discussions with them about what their other options might be. Hey, if it's not going to work through our process, here's someone else you could turn to. Here's another resource that might be more effective in helping you. So our intentions are good, and we are trying to point everybody to the best outcome for them. But sometimes we do have to tell people, I'm sorry, you're not actually entitled to that, and here's the reason why, and here's a statute. If you want to take it up, here's some other numbers you can try.
And sometimes it's easier, you know, to hear it maybe from you or Annette versus like the company going, you're not going to get that money back. You don't, here's why, you know, where it's like when I talk to my kids about something and they don't listen to me, but another adult says the exact same thing.
You call Contact 6?
You're right. Yes.
Jenna, so kids aren't listening.
Okay. Talking about complaints though, what are some of the big ones so far in 2024?
I love this, by the way, because you guys, you know, I love data, and you guys always have this like, here's what we've had so far in 2024.
Annette has so many charts. It's great. So she sent me some charts. So far, our most common type of complaint so far this year, and this is one that's really risen on the list, is banking complaints. So this could be related to money transfers, payment apps, stolen money orders, unauthorized transactions. And I'm not 100% sure why that's the case. I think it's the prevalence of these apps and these convenience, the convenience of these banking options are becoming more popular. But at the same time, maybe there's more fraud going on too, and people are just more aware of it. People are just tackling that as they go.
I wondered something on that because there's so many ways to pay for things now, right?
Yeah.
There's Venmo and PayPal and all sorts of other things. But I think back to your story on the spoofed addresses, when the cheap headphones would be sent to show that a transaction, something was delivered, even though it wasn't the thing they ordered. And you said that might be done so that it's harder to dispute. Mm-hmm. If you're using a credit card, you can still dispute that transaction. If you're using PayPal or something else, maybe not so much. Is that true? Is it
right?
Are you less protected if you're using some of these other payment methods?
Absolutely. A lot of those transfers are very difficult to retrieve if you're using them by a money transfer app. And I'm not going to call out anyone by name, but some have very poor customer service and it's very hard to get through to someone. And when you're talking about someone's money, it could be hundreds or thousands of dollars. And we frequently hear from people saying, I need that money for my rent. I need it for my utility bill. And that's why these banking concerns are so important, and people really want action quickly. And often Contact 6 is able to help with the banking issues.
Sorry, I stopped you at the first one on the list was banking. What else do you have?
Number two on the list is medical billing. There is quite a bit of issues that happen with medical bills, whether it's mistakes or denied coverage. And people often reach out to us for help with those. And we can be effective with medical bills as well. We have good relationships with the hospital systems in the area, and they do look at the complaints that we send their way and resolve them when it's correct to do so. So that's another one. Again, I'm not quite sure. I think it's because medical billing is so expensive. This care is expensive. And we've also done some stories about it highlighting resolutions we've had. So maybe people saw those and said, hey, let's give Contact 6 a try.
So that was banking, mm-hmm. medical billing.
The weather's getting warm as contractors going to be.
Contracting is always up here, but maybe that's not a winter thing. So
usually this is the time of year where we start getting contractor complaints because projects that were start to start in the spring aren't starting, or maybe a project was supposed to start in the fall and they said, hey, I'm sorry, it's going to be the spring. And then all of a sudden action isn't happening. We haven't really had an increase. And in fact, we've seen a decrease in contractor complaints so far this year. Again, not quite sure the reason why.
That should guarantee an influx of
I mean, right. Yeah. Is it all coming in June? Right. That's maybe people are being patient right now because, you know, work can... They're thinking work will start any day. Mm-hmm. So that's one that's down so far. Another one that's down is rental assistance complaints. And that makes complete sense mm-hmm. because during the pandemic, there was all this rental assistance and that kind of lingered into last year where people were still trying to get some of that funding that was available, but it's gone now. So that makes complete sense that we're not getting as many complaints about rental assistance.
Have you seen anything else that you're used to seeing a lot of that you're not getting?
I mean, the contractor one's pretty big. Not as many auto repair issues, but that could always pop up. I'm not convinced auto repair issues are going anywhere. We consistently still get those every month, and I'm sure that will still finish strong this year. But yeah, Contact 6 will often reach out to people or businesses on behalf of people whose car got a bad oil change, for example, or maybe they got a bad repair, or they bought a car that's not working the way it's supposed to. There's lemon laws that can apply. So we're very familiar with those auto issues as well.
I love the specificity of saying you've helped 81 people this year resolve complaints, because sometimes you go, I know Contact 6 is helping a bunch of people, mm-hmm. but I have no idea how many. When I think of the fact that you have Annette back there doing this and you, two people who have resolved the complaints of 81 different people in just a few months, it's tremendous. I think it's amazing to think that you've been able to accomplish that much in such a short time.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's good work. We're glad to be doing it. It's rewarding. And people have a range of issues and a range of resolution dollar amounts. And there's no case that's more important to us than another. We'll try our best to respond to every single person who files a complaint with us. And if we can't help you, to provide you, you know, with the resources you need. But we're here and we want to help if you have an issue.
Because you know what else isn't going away? Consumer issues.
No, that's true. So, and you know, it's
they're really evolving too.
Before we started today with this podcast, we're recording a little bit early because Jenna's got to get out the door. I said, what do you have going on today? She said, I have shoots on three different stories.
I
mean, she's got, you know, so Jenna is going to be right out the door and back to work when we're done. But we're not done just yet. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go off the record. All right, it's time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question that Sarah has devised in her little evil scientist head. So what do you have?
That's great. Actually, this question came from somebody in this room. You guys didn't sound very intrigued.
Well, what's the one I gave you?
It is. Okay, so let's all close our eyes for a second and pretend it's Saturday. Now, I say on Saturday to Jenna, hey, do you want to come over Wednesday? But maybe I say next Wednesday. Mm. What Wednesday do you think I'm talking about?
If you say next Wednesday?
Yes.
Two Wednesdays from now.
Thank you.
This question is going to be the shortest off the record ever because I agree.
Wrong.
What? Okay, there we go. All right, Kale.
All right.
What?
Because it's Saturday, so it's still the former week. Saturday, yeah. So if
so you're saying
Saturday,
next
say
Wednesday is
in next Wednesday. It is the next coming Wednesday.
Absolutely.
But if it was
not.
Monday, if it was Monday, next Wednesday would mean two Wednesdays.
No, I would just say, do you want to come over on Wednesday?
The Wednesday is the next Wednesday. It is that. There's no other Wednesday.
Okay, but so we've left out a word because there are two words to describe the Wednesday we're talking about. There's this Wednesday,
exactly.
And there's next Wednesday.
No.
It'll be this Wednesday.
If it's Saturday,
If I say come over Wednesday,
this is the very next one that's coming, and next Wednesday is the one after that.
But I'm also not going to say that. If I want you to, if it's Saturday and I want you to come over in 4 days, I'm going to go, hey, Brian, do you want to just pop over on Wednesday and do that?
True. Right.
And you're going to go, fine. Yeah, that's
fine. Would you like to come over Wednesday the 25th?
Why should I do that? If I don't, if it means, if I mean, sorry, Kale and I aren't going to be friends after this podcast.
So, okay.
If it's the, if it's Saturday, that means you're not into next week yet. The next Wednesday is the Wednesday
okay,
that's coming.
Okay, so that
if you're Monday, this Wednesday is
I
that
heard
same
your argument.
Wednesday.
This raises a question, though. This is part of what I'm talking. So when you have like you see calendars. Calendars always, they like the Saturday is over here and the Sunday is over here, which suggests that the week begins on Sunday. But I still think of the weekend as one thing, like one. It's so
one entity.
Weekend is an entity to me. And I know that nobody else is probably going to agree with me. To me, the week starts on Monday and it ends on Sunday. That's how I feel in my head, even though the calendar. So my wife looked at the calendar and says, no. That Saturday's the last day, Sunday's the next day. I feel like the week's, I never feel like Sunday starts the week. Sunday is still the, I'm just trying to squeeze out the last drops of my weekend. Don't make me start the next week yet.
That's not the question, Brian.
This just came up. I got an email yesterday from someone who said, I'm available for an interview next Thursday. And I wrote back saying, yes, I'm available Thursday, May 5th. Like, just it was the exact same thing.
Yes.
Just to make sure that that's what they were talking about, because I knew people use this in different ways.
And this works in reverse too, by the way, because if today, so today is Wednesday. If now it's easy if I say last Friday, you know, I mean the Friday just a few days ago.
Yeah.
But if it's Sunday and I say last Friday, do I mean the Friday 2 days
ago? That is also.
Or do I mean the Friday?
Yes.
And 2 days ago. Because if it's Sunday and 2 days ago.
2 days ago, you don't say last Friday.
I don't say last Friday.
No, last Friday. It's two Fridays.
This is becoming like a who's on first situation for me. And I'm not going to lie, my brain went blank when you were just saying all that. Like, is it this Friday or last?
Okay, so, all right. So this podcast is recorded on Wednesday, which right now is April 24th. I had to look at my watch. I don't even know what day it is anymore. It's Wednesday, April 24th. It's going to air on Fox 6 on Sunday.
Yes.
It is not next Sunday.
No, it's Sunday. Sunday.
It's this Sunday. Right?
But you should be on the same.
This is.
But Kale, according to what you said, it would be next Sunday.
No, because if you're in the same week, it's still this Sunday.
Yes.
Sunday is part of this week.
That's what I said. Sunday is part of this week.
I agree with you on that.
Okay. But for the people who think the week starts on Sunday, they're saying that's next Sunday, even though it's just in a few days.
Yes.
And I disagree with that.
Well, first of all, they're wrong because Sunday is part of this week. Monday starts the week.
This episode is airing this Sunday, April 20. What is that? I mean, is April 28th, 27th, 27th? What is? I can't count. I don't know. I don't do dates. Whatever it is.
Either way.
Somebody tell me. It was the 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th.
It's the 24th.
No,
today's the 24th. What's Sunday? Sunday? The 28th? I think it's the 28th. I don't know.
I think you're wrong.
You're watching this on the air.
So, like, on a Monday, on Monday, you don't say last Friday, right? Unless you mean two Fridays ago, if it's a Monday.
On Monday,
And they're like, what did you do on Friday?
To clarify, I would say just this past Friday is what I would say. Because just this past Friday, which I mean the one that just happened as opposed to two Fridays ago. I just think maybe it's just that last, this, and next just aren't specific enough when it comes to dates.
No, but I think everyone, probably in this room, thinks of it a little bit different or uses different wording. And so when it's Wednesday and I say, oh, do you want to come over next Tuesday? I'm not going to say that because that means two Tuesdays from now.
It does.
Well, no. Okay, that's hang on.
Wrong.
This might seem inconsistent to me, but next Tuesday is 6 days. It's completely in the next week. So saying next Tuesday from Wednesday
in the next
makes
week.
Sense. Saying next Tuesday from Friday is questionable. I don't know. I don't know.
So where's the line?
I don't know.
It's muddy.
I don't know that there is a specific line. It's like a continuum. I don't know.
You guys are leaving me infinitely more confused about your reasoning.
So when you get in the car.
That's why you have to add the date. I think you were right to say,
yes.
You know, next Friday, meaning Friday, May, whatever. Or something like that, right? So that's how you clarify.
Because I don't need anyone to show up at my house, but I don't want them.
Well, how about that one? Okay. I wondered when I suggested that as a question, if that would be enough of a talker to carry us.
And here we are. My response to you was that could be a whole episode.
It probably could be.
It would just be us fighting the whole episode.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. We'll fight about this again next Wednesday.
If you just think about it in week chunks, starting on Monday.
Week chunks. That was my band name in college.
So, Does that have anything to do with chicken Absolutely. Chunks? No. Chicken cubes? No, it doesn't. All right. We're going to take one more break and we'll wrap things up when we come right back. We agree that it is Wednesday right now, unless you're watching this on the air and it's Sunday. Or
unless you're listening on Thursday
else.
And watching
but,
on Sunday.
But next Wednesday. Which is Wednesday... What is that? April
23rd. May 1st.
It'll be May 1st next Wednesday, meaning May 1st. We'll be back with another episode. In any case, if you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, Jenna, Sarah, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Of course, see you
back. And thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our executive producer, Sarah Smith, our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer manning the videos, which are Kale Zimney. I feel like I'm a little bit early, so can we talk a little bit more about is
No, it's fine. Dave will just add time,
right? It's fine.
Yeah, Dave will find other things to enjoy.
We're going to record again next Wednesday, right?
We are going to record again, but this is Wednesday, so next Wednesday is a next Wednesday.
That's still be 1 week from today.
Because that's not 2 weeks from now.
Right, but tomorrow, if I say on Thursday, hey, we're going to record,
it's still May 1st.
It's still
And with that,
Wednesday, May 1st.
With that, cut the mic.
With that, I'm Brian Polson, and we'll be back next week.